10 years of bringing you stories and insights from legends around the world of sports. It's Thursday Night Tailgate. No one gets you inside the mind of the greatest legends in the game like we do. Plus, check out our spotlight on the positive segment to hear the great things players are doing in their community. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the show with your hosts, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari. Go get them, guys.
Folks, and welcome to Thursday Night Tailgate, where your favorite NFL legends live. You've got Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari back with you for the next couple of hours. So sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life. Bob, Happy New Year, my friend. How are you?
I was going to tell you the same thing, Chris. Happy New Year. And to all our listeners out there, how's things going down there?
Things are fantastic here. And Atlanta, I got to tell you, Bob, had a great Christmas, had a wonderful New Year's celebration with my family. My boys from Journey played on Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve, which was nice. And my son and I were both Alabama fans. My wife and her family are all huge Georgia fans. So a lot of great wins all around that night on New Year's Eve. So we had a really fun New Year's Eve celebration. Great Christmas, like I say, with family. Next Monday, it could get dicey around the house for the national championship. But so far, everybody's happy. A little trepidation as we inch towards Monday night's national championship game, but very good. How are the holidays up that way?
Good, Chris. We were talking off the air in New England between Christmas and New Year's. It rained every day, and it was between 35 and 40, which that's the grayness of New England in late in the year. It was brutal weather and snowstorm tonight, and like we said, Chris, it's on now. It's on. Winter is on here.
Right. Bob, we had another emotional night this past Monday night, as you can imagine, in my house, and certainly up in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field, with it being Big Ben's final home game. He went out with a big win to keep the Steelers' very slim playoff hopes alive. It probably wasn't the passing performance that Ben always dreamed of on his way out, but a big team win. Want to get your thoughts. What do you think about his home farewell?
I thought it was very emotional, Chris. You know, even, you know, I'm not a big Steelers fan. I'm more of a football fan in general. But, you know, I go back with that franchise to the late 60s, early 70s, when it was all starting. And when you have a guy like him, who's been around 18 years, sticks with one franchise, we hope this is it for him. But just the way things were presented, Chris, I thought it was great. He ran out on the field. I haven't heard any ovations like that in a long time. And he kind of knew that they had a chip on their shoulder that night. Like you said, it wasn't pretty. I mean, I think I read that it was the first time a guy threw more than 40 passes in a game and threw less than 150 yards. I think that was the first time in almost 50 years. But, I mean, the chip on their shoulder lay where they sacked the quarterback nine times. You know those guys were playing for Ben that game. So I think it was great overall, Chris, and I know you as a Steelers fan have a lot to be thankful for, no matter how this season pans out. But I know it's time for Ben, but, you know, as a football fan, I just need to thank that guy for a lot of memories.
Yeah, it was an emotional night for us, and certainly watching him go out, like I said, I'm sure in the way he had it drawn up, where he'd throw for over 300 yards and three or four touchdowns and all that and get the win. It didn't pan out quite that way, but, you know, team win. But it was what I liked most was at the end of the game that he got an opportunity to come back out and kneel down one last time. And then sort of the Cal Ripken trip around the stadium, do that victory lap. And I thought that was nice. And obviously his family coming down and all that sort of thing. So I'm glad all of that got to happen for him. He got to go out on a winning note at home. One more game to go, obviously, and probably if he was going to pick an opponent to have his last game against, I got to imagine it would be the Baltimore Ravens. So that'll be a fun time. It'll be interesting to see how the Ravens fans receive him for his last game, but looking forward to watching that on Sunday. I want to get your thought as well, Bob. Another thought on the Steelers, and particularly Mike Tomlin's record as head coach. That win Monday night secures that Tomlin will still never have a losing season as head coach of the Steelers. The naysayers are going to point out that they've only won 3 playoff games since 2009, even though they've won 5 division titles over that time. Does it mean something that the Steelers are always in the playoff mix, or does the fact that they aren't doing enough with those opportunities be kind of a tarnish on Tomlin's record? Your thought of, hey, he's not going to have another losing, or he's not going to have a losing season, still hasn't had one, but they really haven't done a heck of a lot with all those winning seasons.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story, Chris, and you're on top of it as much as anyone being a Steeler fan. This is a guy that, you know, the players love. He is an old school kind of guy, you know, and that's why the whole Chase Claypool thing, we kind of laughed when, and Tomlin kind of looked at it as if, you know, okay, just, you know, if we practice, I'll coach, but he's that kind of guy. But when you think about it, Chris, you know about the Steelers since the 70s. It's all about winning in the postseason with them. And he will go down as an incredibly good regular season coach. I mean, never having a losing record, that's a long time to do that. I don't care who you are and, you know, who you have as a GM, et cetera. The guy knows how to coach. A lot of people like his style. And then the naysayers, again, Chris, over the years, you know, we've seen it on Twitter. We've seen it a lot of places. People just didn't like some of the decisions he made. But you're right. 3 playoff wins in those 15, well, in the last 10 years. You know, for Steeler fans, Steelers, it's all about going back. And maybe this is a curse for Tomlin that he is in that franchise where they are expected to win a lot in the postseason. And that's not been the case lately. So I don't know if he'd be celebrating right now, Chris. He'll go down as a very, very good coach. But, you know, unless he has a couple more trips to the Super Bowl up his sleeve these next few years, I think it's just going to go down as kind of a, well, Tomlin was good, but he wasn't that good.
Yeah, I agree. And I know my parents are listening. My father agrees with that as well. He's had a lot of opportunities, and I think he needed to cash in a few more of those. And I agree with you. If they don't find their way back to a Super Bowl, and certainly looking at their performance this year, they're not a team that is one or two players away from being a Super Bowl contender. It seems like they got a lot of holes on defense. They got a lot of holes along that offensive line. Obviously, they're going to need to replace Ben. That doesn't happen in one off season. So I think they're several seasons away from being a Super Bowl contender. It's going to be interesting to see not only what they do in the draft and how they handle this offseason and how they go about replacing Ben, but how Tomlin reacts to that and what he's able to get out of his players. So, yeah, I think he's a very good coach. I think, I think he needs to get a couple of more wins along the way at an AFC Championship Super Bowl level to be a great one. But Bob, looking ahead to this coming Monday night, not only for the national championship, I mean, this Sunday night, I should say, it's an all or nothing game for the Raiders and the Chargers. Winner is in, loser is out. Would it be a great story for the Chargers and Justin Herbert, who has gotten off to a heck of a start in his career? What a great young quarterback that kid is. But if the Chargers were to lose, is it a huge disappointment for them to miss the playoffs again and all of that offensive talent that they've had over about that same period of time? We're talking about the Steelers over the last decade. Same holds true for the Chargers. And all those years of Phillip Rivers right now feel like those were wasted years because they never really got very far in the playoffs. Only 2 playoff appearances in that time as well. So is it if the Chargers win and in, great story for Justin Herbert. If they lose and out, a tragedy for the Chargers. Or on the opposite side of that coin, Bob, is it a better feel-good story for the Raiders, who have had to overcome just a ton of personnel issues this year and, you know, going all the way back to the John Gruden stuff early on in this season? Is it a huge feel-good story for those guys for all they've had to overcome to get into the playoffs if they were going to get a win? What is the story coming out of next Sunday night?
I think it's a combination of both, Chris. Not to cop out of this, but the Raiders, like you said, a lot of things to overcome. Even another one this week, you know, a DUI by one of the defensive players, I believe. And, you know, we've tweeted about it before. I mean, personal issues off the field, and for them to actually be in the playoff hunt right now, even after a coaching change, you know, I think Bisaccia, the interim coach, Chris, I mean, he's done a great job just keeping it together. You know, there's talent on that team, but to have to deal with all this other stuff, for them to have this game means something is great for them. On the flip side, as you said, the Chargers, I think when they had the changing of the guard from Rivers to Herbert, they said that's probably going to be the thing that puts us maybe a little over the hump. You know, now is the time to get in. So it would be an incredible disappointment for them to not make the playoffs. As of right now, they are. They would be in, I think. But can you imagine? I mean, it would be a major disappointment for them. So I think it goes both ways, because that's what's the great thing about this game. You know, either way, whatever happens, somebody's going to, it's going to be a very disappointing, at least for the home team. But, it was a great question. I mean, it's a bigger game than people think because of what you just said.
Yeah. And as we like to try to keep things more on the positive note, I'm rooting for the Raiders to get it done because of all the different hurdles and the personnel issues. And to your point, coming up even just this past week, another one, for their head coach to be able to keep that team playing well and keeping them focused on what's going on the field with all the off the field distractions. Huge, huge kudos to him. And I'm rooting for the Raiders to get it done, to have that feel good story. Bob, let's move along into our Unsung Hero of the Week award. Who was a lesser known player that impressed you last week?
You know, Chris, I was watching the New England game, and, you know, it was kind of a blowout game and everything, but you know, I'm looking at their stars that day, and running back Ramondre Stevenson, you know, when you're his career at Oklahoma, Chris, kind of went under the radar screen. It wasn't great. I mean, he put up decent numbers. It was, you know, obviously a great program at Oklahoma, but nothing big. I mean, think about it. I mean, the great draft pick for them was Mac Jones. I mean, that was the guy that everybody knows. And, you know, Stevenson started the year and kind of fell into the doghouse a little bit after a fumble or two. But, you know, this past week, he goes out and rushes for 100 yards again. That was his second 100-yard game, Chris. He scored his two touchdowns when the game was out of whack. I'll grant people that. But, you know, when you're a fourth-round draft pick by the Patriots, you know, you're going to have that kind of underdog type of blue-collar mentality. And that's what he had. So it was great to see. I mean, he's caught a bunch of passes this year, has done whatever they've asked him to do. And it just seemed early in that game, even against the lowly Jaguars, he had some runs that just took the life out of the other team. So we're going to give it to him. You know, a fourth round draft pick, but one kind of under the radar, but is doing what he's asked to told and what he's been asked to do in New England.
I'm going to stay right at that same position, Bob, and I'm going to go just to another team there in the AFC East for my Unsung Hero of the Week award, and that's Bills running back Devin Singletary. Ange and I talk about him all the time. He's a guy who played his college ball at Florida Atlantic, and very quietly, oh, by the way, led Division I football in rushing touchdowns, combined touchdowns, total points, and rushed for 1,920 yards as a sophomore. And when he left Florida Atlantic, he was their all-time leading rusher. Ended up being a third-round pick by the Bills back in 2019. And so far this season, Bob, he's averaged 4.6 yards a carry. But before last Sunday, he was only averaging 9 carries a game. And for the season, he only had a few more rushing yards than their quarterback, Josh Allen, had. Then last week against the Falcons, they finally start giving Singletary the ball. He had 23 carries, 110 yards, 2 touchdowns. Ange and I both contend he's a guy who should be getting the ball 20 to 25 times a game, and he'd be putting numbers up like that every week. And, you know, not only would the numbers be great, but, you know, Josh Allen, as we all know, Bob, rushing quarterbacks eventually get hurt. We saw it with RG3. We've seen it through quarterbacks throughout time, right? So having a guy like Singletary carry the rock the majority of the time and letting Allen focus on passing instead of calling all of these quarterback, you know, scrambles and the run pass options and all of that, and allowing him to run, give the ball to Singletary. The guy's built for this sort of thing. And, you know, as we look at what he could do and what he could become in that backfield, he could save Josh Allen. He could be a guy that could contend for a rushing title. Again, 4.6 yards a carry. Why are you only giving the guy the ball 9 times a game? You think you'd want to give that guy the ball a bunch, and they should be. And that's why he's my Unsung Hero of the Week. Two running backs from the AFC East get our Unsung Hero of the Week awards.
It's time for another edition of Bob's Take. So, Bob, tell us, what's on your mind tonight?
Into this week's edition of Bob's Take. Bob, news from around the NFL. I want to get your take on it, starting with your thoughts on Baker Mayfield's future in Cleveland. Had a rough night against my Steelers. Threw two more picks in that game. He threw four the game before that against Green Bay. He has seven in his last three games, six touchdowns, 17 touchdowns, 13 interceptions on the season. Now he's out this week. He's going in for surgery on that torn left labrum he has in that left shoulder. Is he back next year as a starting quarterback in Cleveland?
You know, Chris, you hear a lot of rumors. I've read a lot this week. Many people that think he's going to get one more shot in Cleveland. But, you know, over the next couple months, depending on surgery and depending on personnel moves across the league, you just don't know if the GM and all the brass is going to say, we can probably get a young quarterback, or we might be able to trade for something, and maybe Mayfield will be a better place. He might be better playing elsewhere, but you look at, there is a lot of teams out there that are probably going to be in the market for a quarterback, Chris. And, you know, the ones that come to mind, obviously, are the Giants, because they haven't really made an, it's been an awful year there. And even with a Daniel Jones healthy there, I'm not sure they're much better than they are right now. So I think that's a spot. I don't know it would be ideal for him. You know, the Saints with the whole Taysom Hill Winston thing, I don't know if that's a long-term thing. That might be a landing spot. But he's more of a, I think Mayfield's more of a kind of a blue-collar kind of guy, Chris. He's played all year banged up. I mean, right from the, almost from the beginning, every, you could tell, guy's in pain, but he goes out there and plays, you know. I was amazed that he was still playing last week. I mean, he probably should have gone for the surgery earlier. But, you know, I like him as far as in that respect. So I look down the suitors that might have that kind of need for a guy with that mentality. The team that makes sense to me is like a Washington. Rivera's that kind of coach. They're kind of running back based. Heinicke, you know, he's tried his best. I don't think he's the answer. He's a bench guy, Chris. I think that's probably where he, and the quarterback coach there, Zampezi, was Mayfield's coach in Cleveland. So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, there's been rumors, you know, trade him for Russell Wilson and see what else you can get. I don't know, but I think Washington might be the best place for him right now. But I do give the guy credit for playing hurt throughout the year, and I like to see what he can do healthy.
Next, Bob, and we all saw it, Antonio Brown walked out mid-game on Sunday with the Bucs trailing the Jets, oh, by the way, in the third quarter at that time. It's been reported that Bruce Arians told him to get out after asking AB to, you know, go into the game not once but twice, and both times he refused to do it. Have we finally seen the last of him, or do you think somebody else is going to rush out there and pick him up?
You know, I saw an article on CBS Sports yesterday, and it said, who will be next for, you know, what's the next best landing spot for him? And I said, are you kidding? Why would they even bring that up right now? They're not helping matters at all. I mean, I know it's media, and they're paid to sell stuff like this, but, you know, this is a guy that's obviously a sick dude, Chris. We've talked about ad nauseum. I made a pact with myself earlier this week. I said, this is the last I'm going to be doing the reading on this guy. Let me see what this situation's all about. The more you read about Chris, I mean, think about it. Arians or Antonio Brown, who has zero credibility? All right, that's kind of obvious. So when you read what one said about the other, the story basically is he basically was mad that he wasn't getting thrown to. He has incentives in his contract that he would have met either that game or this coming week, Chris. It wasn't like he was far. I mean, he would have done it easily. And Brady would have made that happen. But he was kind of, the bottom line is he was not happy about not getting the ball. He was being treated for an ankle injury he was on the list for the week, Chris, but it was kind of fine. The doctors gave him the clearance. And if his ankle was really bothering, I guess the way you do things in Tampa is you have to let medical staff know, that you cannot go into the game. That never happened. So, I mean, this guy just got caught. I think he's got caught in a bunch of lies. And it's just typical him, Chris. He has the ability to blow up a team. It's addition by subtraction without him being there now. And the ironic thing is, you and I have talked about it ad nauseum over the year, he is a Hall of Fame player, and he's done nothing over the last 3 years. Can you imagine if he put out his normal output over the last 3 years, Chris? He'd be right behind Jerry Rice as the greatest of all time.
Right. Yeah. That's only one of the many sad things about this story. So, as a Steeler fan, I rooted hard for Antonio Brown for a bunch of years. But one of the things I always used to say to my Steeler buddies is they can win without him. They didn't win a Super Bowl with him. They could win without him. And he was so much of a distraction those last couple of years. I was rooting for them to trade him, and they just wouldn't do it. And I know it's hard to do when you've got, but to your point, Bob, arguably the second best wide receiver of all time on your team. Do you really want to lose that and have it go somewhere else to maybe come back and bite you? But we've seen what he's been. And I really, really hope he gets the help he needs, because I'm sort of convinced he's got a severe condition of CTE. That's the only thing that I can think of that could change a person that drastically. Now, maybe a whole bunch of things that happened behind the scenes with the Steelers that we don't know anything about, that Tomlin and the rest of the team were able to kind of keep him under wraps. We may find that out later in life. But what I'm really hoping right now is he gets the help he needs and nobody else picks him up. One more, Bob, before we get to our first guest, Don Beebe. Terrell Owens has made it known that he'd like to compete for AB's roster spot in Tampa. He said since they would only need him for 3 or 4 games and he's remained in top shape, he could do it. Is it crazy, Bob, for the Bucs to give him a look?
You know, I really think it is kind of crazy, Chris. This is not a 38 or 40-year-old or 42-year-old. He's a 48-year-old guy, Chris. And you know, he got out of football. Guy's in the Hall of Fame. Have you ever heard of any Hall of Famers coming back? I mean, he's already in. But, I mean, a guy that went out with his health intact, pretty much, you know, it's a different game, Chris, over the last few years. I mean, why even bother? You know, is it totally crazy? Well, you know, I mean, he probably looks at a guy like Brady. Look what Brady's doing. Brady is a freak. You know, that's, you can't go that way. So, yeah, any guy over 45 years old, especially a non-quarterback, Chris, that wants to come back into football, stay on the sidelines. You know, ask for a broadcasting gig and don't be stupid.
There you go, folks. That's this week's edition of Bob's Take. Okay, we've got a jam-packed show for you tonight with our guests Don Beebe, Tony Collins, Randy Cross, and Todd Stussy. We'll be right back with Don Beebe on the other side of this real quick station break.
Folks, I want to introduce you to our new friends over at Canopy and their line of CBD products. I used to wake up several times during the night, which made it hard to get out of bed in the morning and left me really feeling less than myself all day. But I can tell you from personal experience, my sleep has dramatically improved since I started using Canopy Nighttime Blend. Now I sleep straight through the night and wake up refreshed every morning. If sleep isn't your issue, they have a variety of products that can help you out. If you struggle with muscle aches after a workout or a day out on the golf course, if you have first tee jitters or your knees lock up in your backswing, check out trycanopy.com. That's trykanibi.com. And look at their selection of tinctures, creams, and gummies that can give you the edge after you exercise or while you're out on the golf course. And really, just make all of your days better. Their hemp is 100% grown in the U.S., and you know we love that. And when you choose Canopy, you are choosing prized harvest, expert extractions, and precision manufacturing with zero artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives. So if you need help sleeping through the night like me, relief from muscle aches, or the pressure of a busy day, give Canopy a try. Again, that's trycanopy, trykanibi.com. And if you use coupon code TNT, you're going to get 20% off your first order. Again, trycanopy.com. You're going to be glad you did.
You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
It's him. He's alive.
Okay, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former wide receiver and now Aurora University head coach Don Beebe. Let me remind you about Don's background. He's from Aurora, Illinois, and he attended Caneland High School in Maple Park, Illinois, where he was a 3-sports star lettering in track, basketball, and football. Started out his college career at Western Illinois University and later transferred to Chadron State College there in Nebraska, where he ran track and played football. Despite only being there for 1 year, he became the first person in school history to score a touchdown in every game. He also was the first to score 5 touchdowns in a game. He set the school single season record for most touchdowns with 15, most points with 90, and most all-purpose yards with 1,663. In track, he set the NAIA District 11 record in the 60-yard dash. The Omaha Herald named him the 1989 State College Athlete of the Year, and he was inducted into the Chadron State Athletic Hall of Fame in 2000, and their football stadium is now named in his honor. He was invited to the Combine in 1989, where he ran a 4.4 40, which was the fastest among the receivers. He was a third-round pick, but actually the Bills' first pick in the 1989 draft. Played in the league from 89 to 1997 for the Bills, Panthers, and Packers, and was a part of the Packers Super Bowl 31 championship team. And like I mentioned, he is now the head coach at Aurora University. He led them to an 8-2 regular season record and a number 5 ranking in Region 5. And we're excited to have him back with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Don, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
We're fantastic. Happy New Year. How's the family?
Yeah. Yeah, they're real good. Chad was back, and he, for the past couple of days, in between Christmas and New Year's. And then, my daughter was back from Tennessee. So all 4 kids were together for the first time in a while.
Good for you. Don, yeah. I want to start our time with you tonight by getting your thoughts on your Aurora Spartans and the season you guys had. Finished 8-3 overall, including finishing the regular season with 8 straight wins and a repeat berth in the Division III playoffs, and I think you finished the season ranked number 22 overall. Talk about the season.
You know, we're close. This was our third year, if you want to asterisk a COVID year. So really 2 years of being a coach there. And, we're really close. We've lost, I think the record is 20-5. I think we had a short spring season. And the 4 of the 5 losses have been number 1, number 4, number 5, and number 6 in the country. So we're getting there. Really proud of guys. That first group that we had in 19 just really kind of set the standard for where we were going. And I think, this next season is going to bode very well for AU, and I really like our chances.
Don, your senior defensive back, Sean Reyna, was nominated for the Cliff Harris Award this year, which is given to the top small college defensive player of the year. He had 7 interceptions. Talk about what you saw from him.
Yeah, Sean led our defense. He's a small guy, but I'm telling you, he plays big. He's really fast, had 7 or 8 picks this year, and really played well for us. And then on the other side of the ball, Gavin Zimmerman is our quarterback, and he's been the last 2 years, 2019 and 2021, a finalist of the Gagliardi Trophy, which is the Heisman of Division III. I think he was 3rd in the ballot in 19. I'm not sure where he finished up. I know he's top 5 this year. But he's thrown, he threw 57 touchdowns in 19, and I don't know what he landed up this year, but he's had a remarkable career. It's too bad we're gonna lose him, but we gotta fill his shoes, and that'll be big shoes to fill.
Don, one of the things that Bob and I love most about you and one of our other good friends, Willie Simmons at Florida A&M, you both talk about the importance of playing with men of character and having a team filled with men of character. Talk about why that's so important to you.
Two words, Marv Levy. You told Bill Pulling in that as well, and John Butler. I just remember, when playing for the Bills, it was kind of a theme that Bill would talk about and Marv would talk about a lot, is that we find men of character. And I remember, it had been late 2018 when I knew I was going to get this job. Went to dinner with Coach, went downtown. He lives downtown Chicago, and, went to dinner with him, and I just started talking with him, and I said, Coach, I said, if you're going to recruit kids, what'll be the first thing you look for? He didn't even bat an eye. He said, find character. Kind of knew what he was going to say, but yet it is exactly what I look for. If you don't pass the character test, I don't even care how good you are. You're not going to play at AU. And can you bat 1,000? No. You're going to bring in guys that land up being knuckleheads, and you know, then they'll start to be removed from the team. I just knew that Bill Polian had absolutely zero tolerance of it. And some people might say, well, this guy was a knucklehead and this guy was a knucklehead because they got in trouble. No, that's not what they're talking about. I remember when I would score a touchdown, one of the first guys that would be there would be Thurman Thomas. He actually genuinely, and this is one of the things I look for in character, because people ask me all the time, well, how do you know my kid's got character? And I said, well, I've observed everything you've done in this meeting. I observed how you speak to your dad, your mom. And when I watch your film, I want to see how you react after you score a touchdown. But more importantly, I'll put somebody else's tape on, like say he's a wide receiver, right? And another wide receiver scores. I'm going to watch his tape, but I want to see the reaction of the guy I'm recruiting. Does he genuinely have, you know, joy for another person scoring a touchdown? That's a team guy. That's a guy I'm looking for. If he kind of just stands there and watches and doesn't really care that we see on TV today, he'd never play for me. And I know that's the exact way Bill Polian looked at it too, Marv.
Five questions for Don.
Hey, Don, it's great to have you back. And just about your coaching experience currently, I mean, is there some automatic credibility when you're a former NFL player to your players, Don? Do they look at you as having instant credibility because you played in the league, or is this something that you constantly have to continue to prove to them?
No, I think initially, Bob, I mean, that's a good question. I think initially it gives you credibility. Okay. In the recruiting game, it gives you credibility. But once they get there and they're on the team and they're not, you know, they're part of the, then if you don't treat them right and you don't really care about them and you're not brushing the rug under for, you know, the star players and the guy that's never going to play, if you don't treat them all the same in that respect, you lose the respect. And so I think initially, yes, but as time goes on, no. You know, I'm just coach. And I think the number one thing that I think, going back to Coach Levy again, that he was so good at is he was all about relationships. He's one of the few guys, and now that my son plays, you know, you see different, you know, coaching styles and I had different coaching styles. One thing about Coach Levy is he was probably one of the most humble Hall of Fame people I've ever been around. He was true to his word. He would speak to you face to face, instead of treating it like big business. Men like Coach Levy are few and far between. Let me just say that. And that's why I admired him, and that's why I consider him a good friend even still today. And I know I can speak for all the guys that played for him. Nobody, I don't think, has ever said a bad word about Coach Lee.
And Don, Chris had mentioned you were a third round draft pick, first by the Bills, but third round. I mean, I always like to get people's reaction to draft day when they were drafted. How were you feeling that day? What were you doing that day? And how did you find out about what transpired?
Yeah, well, first of all, me and my wife, this was our first year being married at Shatter, and we went out there, mm-hmm. which was a culture shock, but being from Chicago area. And we had 21, and we were renting this house that was probably, I want to say it was like 800, 600, really small. We had 21 people out in the house. And I'm a man of faith. So I really wasn't, like you see somebody panicking and wondering and they're mad that they don't get picked. And I'm like, I really didn't care. I knew I was probably going to get drafted with everything that was being said. And I was just like, you know, God, wherever you want me to go, I know you're going to take me to the right place. And boy, did he take me to the right place. I couldn't, if I was to do this all over again, I could not pick a better place to get drafted and go play football for 6 years. And hands down, the best place I could have gone. And that's why I really just wasn't that panicked. And I was sitting on the couch, the phone rang. It was 5:12. I remember it distinctly. PM, obviously. And it was Coach Levy. And he said, Don, I just want you to know that we just took you with our first pick in the third round, in the draft. And then we just had a conversation, and I just, you know, I was like honored. It was kind of a culture shock for me because I, you know, coming from Shadron, well, you know, playing small time football, and then have to get on a plane, me and my wife, the very next day and fly to Buffalo and meet the press and everything like this. And it was like, you know, I didn't go to Florida State, so I wasn't used to, you know, media, let's say, and stuff of that nature. But I don't ever remember not fitting in. I think the Bills really made me feel at home right away. The fans were unbelievable. And it was just, golly, still six of the best years of my life. There's no doubt about it. And I know I speak for my wife on that one, too.
Don, and speaking of being a man of faith, I read that you're pretty much a creature of habit. You were during your playing days. I'm sure you are still today. And you wore the same shirt under your pads. And I know that, like I say, being a faith-based person, do you mind talking about what that shirt was and why you wore it every day under your pads?
Yeah, it says Pain Your Gain. You know, it was just a weightlifting shirt, you know, showing somebody lifting, but it was really Christ on the cross. And it says His pain, and it was my gain, which most people would understand what that means. Him dying on the cross was His pain, but it gave me everything. It gave me, you know, eternal life. So I always wore that shirt. I always wore that because, when I stepped out on the football field, I didn't want it to be about me. I knew when I was very young, I wanted to do two things. I wanted to play sports and I wanted to play for Him. Ironically, how God had taken me through that whole thing. And most people know that story because I wore that under my pads at Super Bowl 27, when I ran down Leon Lett, and people asked me all the time about that shirt, believe it or not. Obviously they ask me about that play all the time too, and I tell them, I'll never forget, you know, there's certain prayers you never forget, right? And I remember an hour before the game, it was just a beautiful, beautiful Pasadena day. And I went out of an hour before and I was kneeling at the 50-yard line, and my prayer was just very simple. I just said, you know, Lord, let me glorify Your name today more than any other game I've ever played. And people will say to me, well, you got blown out. I say, oh, no. You don't understand that game was the Leon Lett play, and that play has meant more to, I mean, it's unbelievable the 1,000 times I've had to talk about this play that has helped change their lives and perspective on never giving up and stuff of that nature. And whether it's I'm in a church or just a kids group or just coaching at AU, you know, it's given me such a platform. And I always said, selfishly speaking, after I got done praying, I seriously thought, Chris and Bob, I was going to score the touchdown to win the game. That's how good I felt. Now I'm going to make this one hand J.J. Jefferson stab in the back of the end zone to win the game with no time on the clock. I really thought that was what's going to happen, you know? But no, God gave me the Leon Lett play. And this is why, is because when I stand in front of people today and I speak, how many people can relate to a one-handed stab in the back of the end zone in the Super Bowl? Nobody. But how many people can relate to the Leon Lett play? Everybody. And I think that's in itself. Now, I'm sure there's some people out there saying, well, man, I wish you wouldn't have prayed because we got beat. But anyway, there's things more than football. But, yeah, those are one of the prayers and times in that shirt. I mean, I wish I would have kept that shirt. I'll be honest with you.
So, Don, let's take that play one step further, because after the game is over, I read that your owner, the owner of the Bills, Ralph Wilson, came into the locker room, passed everybody up, came right to you and talked to you about what that play meant to him. And then to your point, you talked about it 1,000 times. You started getting boxes and boxes of fan mail about that play. Talk about what it meant to you for Ralph Wilson to come to you first, talk about what it meant to him, and then what it's meant to Bills fans ever since.
Yeah, well, sure. If you watch my reaction initially, it meant nothing, right? I mean, I got up, I adjusted my helmet because Leon fell on me and kneed me, and I had to adjust my helmet. I was still pretty upset with getting whooped. Nobody really knew what happened because there was kind of a delay, you know, what they were going to call. Remember going to the sideline? Then the first thing that ever was out of, you know, just a little bit different was Thurman came up to me and he said, hey, Beeb, thanks for hustling, man. not let him score another touchdown. You know, it is common, you know, talk, anything, no problem. But it didn't really start meaning, or then it started meaning something when I got into the locker room. And like you said, I was sitting at my locker, taking off my shoes, and, you know, and Ralph came in. I just peeked up, and there he's coming in, you know, his brown trench coat. And next thing I know, I was just untying my shoes, and he walked right to me. And, he looked at me, and he said, son, he said, you showed everybody what Buffalo Bills are all about. I just want to say thanks. And I was like, okay, I mean, that obviously meant something to him, you know. And then the next person that came up was Scott Birchtold, and he worked with the Bills and the marketing department and everything and did a lot of PR. And he's a good friend. And Scott said, hey, Beep, they want you down at the podium. And I was like, well, I don't want to go down there. We just got smoke, man. I don't send Jim down there. Jim always has to go. But so I went, and that's all we talked about. I didn't get questions really about the game, not like that. It was just, why? Why'd you run him down? I mean, what were you thinking? Why? And I had so many people in front of me. Then I started thinking to myself, man, that's a lot of people. I'm just doing my job, guys. I didn't think nothing of it, you know? And then I got home. And when I got to One Bills Drive the next day, there, and over the course of the next few days and weeks to come, I literally was getting boxes. I mean, big boxes of fan mail letters, thousands. I got a little box of about 20 to 30 of them that I kept. The really ones that were emotional by dads and parents and coaches and stuff of that nature. Ones that really touched me, you know. And here we are. I don't even know. It's 1993, guys. I mean, it's so many years later, and we're still talking about this. And I'm going to say this, and this is the honest truth. I get at least one letter a day coming through Aurora University football, House of Speed, the business I used to have, or my home. Somebody writes a letter and mentions something about the Leon Left play. I mean, the miles and the traction that play has gotten is as much as any in the history for this guy here. I mean, it's been crazy, but yet that's God giving so many opportunities to especially through this whole COVID thing. So many people alone in this strong town give up, just give me so many opportunities to just say, you know, you can't give up. And when I say that, whether it's, you know, people look at that and say, oh yeah, that's the guy who's going to win less. So it gives, like you were saying earlier, gives instant credibility to listen. And, so anyway, I'm not proud of the play, but I am very honored and blessed to use that play, to touch people's lives. Cause to me, that's what it's all about.
And you and Leon are going to be connected forever because of that play. And If I read between the lines correctly, you and Leon are actually friends now, right?
Yeah, Leon is D-line with the Raiders, the Cowboys coach, and we speak periodically, but we spent a few days together. They were going to do a piece on it for some media thing and got to really know him during that time. The first time I'd ever met him was 2 months after Super Bowl. Sports Illustrated wanted to do an article on it. It had become such a big thing in America on talk radio, that we met in West Palm Beach, Florida, and, we did a piece on it. And I got to know Leon. I'll be honest with you, I love Leon. I think he's a great guy, just a gentle giant, of a human being. And he's actually using the same play. We just come from completely different opposite, you know, starting points. But they're still telling the same story of never giving up.
Don, one more before we let you go. And when I was doing the research for our time tonight, I ran across a story from when Russell Copeland was a rookie wide receiver with the Bills. You guys are sitting around the wide receiver room talking about your nicknames. And Russell shared, you know, his, and when it was came his, you know, his time to speak, he gets up on the floor and talks about what his nickname it was. And, you know, Gold Tooth showing, calls himself Franchise. And then you guys pulled a pretty interesting prank on him Thanksgiving week with a local butcher. Do you mind sharing that story?
Well, yeah, I remember, first of all, James Lofton was a real practical joker. And so between me, Tasker, Andre, and James, you know, we had four veteran guys. And in comes this Russell Copeland, his rookie year. In one of the first practices, we're just sitting around the meeting room, just a wideout room. And James always asks, hey, you got a nickname? What do they call you? And it wasn't that it was the nickname franchise or the gold tooth and smile. It's the way he said it. Like, he really was the franchise. You know, it's like, franchise, man. And James, next thing you know, James is under the table laughing so hard at Russell. And Russell didn't understand it. He's like, why are you laughing, man? So that was funny in itself. So Tasker and a group of guys decide, well, they're going to get him. Okay. They used to do this prank, you know, during Thanksgiving. They used to do this quite often, actually, every 3, 4, 5 years or so. They didn't do it every year because you know, and nobody hardly ever falls for it. Matter of fact, they tried to get me, and Frank said, please, don't fall for that. Don't go get your stupid turkey. So he actually bailed me out. I'm not sure I would ever win, but who knows. Anyway, yeah, so they got footage of hidden cameras of Russell walking in there, wanting his turkey, and the guy said, we don't get no turkeys. He goes, and he gets out his ID, and he says, I'm Russell Copeland, Buffalo Bills. No, you're not. I know who Russell is. You're not Russell. And he was getting mad. And then finally the butcher says, fine, you want your turkey? Fine, I'll go get your turkey. He comes out and grabs his turkey, slaps his thing down. And right before he's about to chop this turkey head off, they pranked him. And it was, I'm telling you, when they were showing this video in the team room the next morning, there wasn't a dry eye in that room. But that was the kind of fun we used to have. You know, we had such a great group, guys. I mean, really, a bunch of high character guys that just love playing a game. And I think that's why we were so successful, because we had a great organization and just a bunch of good guys. And I think that's the ingredient you got to find. You just have to find that. And I think it comes from the general manager and it comes from the head coach, and you got to create that culture. Those are the teams that are successful. Andy Reid's done it now in Kansas City. You know, and Frank's doing it in Indy. So you start to see who's successful and why they're successful. Well, there's a certain ingredient why they are.
Don, I can't let you go. We've got our next guest, Tony Collins, former Patriots Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins, hanging on the line. He's going to join us next. Got to get your thoughts on the NFL playoffs. Is this the Bills' year? Can they beat the Patriots and everybody else in the AFC and get back to a Super Bowl?
Well, I'm picking the Bills and the Packers. Wouldn't that
of course you are.
Oh, yeah.
Of course I am. And the Bills are going to win it, finally. Green Bay's going to be tough to beat in Lambeau. I don't see anybody really beating on the NFC side. It's always going to be hard to win Lambeau. You know, the Bills, hopefully they win this weekend, right, against the Jets, and they, you know, get some home field there. Because that, you know, it's always going to be Rich Stadium to me, but that place is hard to win. There's certain places that are really hard to win. One of them is Buffalo in the winter. Kansas City's another one. And certainly Lambeau's another tough place to win because of just cold weather. But I'm picking Bills and Packers, man. I mean, for obvious reasons.
Right. Don, before we let you go, remind our listeners, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing there at Aurora University and just all the stuff that you're doing outside of the game of football as well? How can they follow you on social media?
Yeah, you know, DonBeebe.com is probably the best thing. I do a lot of traveling in the off season, speaking engagements and stuff of that nature, clinics and what have you. Then obviously the AU website, if they want to learn something about Aurora University football. I'll recruit any kid in any area. We a lot of our kids, half our kids are out of state anyway. If the kid's got some talent, send me your film. I'd love to watch it.
That's awesome. Don, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of the show. You're fantastic, my friend. We hope you'll come back and join us again soon.
All right, Chris and Bob. Have a good one.
Happy New Year to you and your folks, friend.
All right.
See you, Don.
You guys. Bye-bye.
Night.
That's a great Don Beebe. We've got our next guest, Tony Collins, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Tony and our five-star picks of the week right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back to take us through our five-star picks of the week is former Patriots Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins. Happy New Year, Tone. How are you, my friend?
Hi, Tony. Happy New Year, Chris and Bob. How you guys doing?
We're fantastic, Tony. Santa, good to you, Tone?
Absolutely, man. Got a chance to spend time with my family. Man, we in the snow up in Colorado, man. Everything was just so great. If we got a lot of snow. The kids wanted snow, and they got a lot of snow.
Good for them. Tony, it's been a few weeks since we got together. We last time was, you know, prior to the holidays, and we put our picks in, though, and I want to remind everybody where we were the last time we got together. So you were out in front at 14-11 on the season. Bob was a game back at 13-12. I was at 11-14. You go back to our picks on our last show. You and Bob both had really good weeks at 4-1 in week 15. I was 3-2. And then since we weren't on the show last week, we still texted each other who we were picking and whatnot. So let's go through that. Last week, we all took Kansas City in the game against the Bengals. So we all got a loss there. We all took Tennessee and they blew out the Dolphins. We all took Indy. They lose to the Raiders. So we all get another loss there. So through three games, we're all 1-2. Tony, you and I took Arizona to beat the Cowboys. Bob took Dallas, so you and I get a win there. And then, Tony, you took Cleveland. Can't believe it. While Bob and I were right in picking the Steelers. I mean, how is Ben going to lose to Cleveland in his last home game, Tony?
You know what I didn't know, Chris, for that game? I didn't know that was Ben's last home game. I didn't know. If I would have known that, I would have picked the Steelers.
Yeah, you got to be in the know on that, Tone. So you take a loss. Bob and I both get a win there. So for the week, I was 3-2. You and Bob were 2-3. So now for the season, you're still a game up on Bob at 20-15. He's 19-16. I'm 17-18. I looked down and said, well, how many games left do we have? And we have 18 games left. If you go all the way, we go all the way to the Super Bowl, 5 this week and then the playoffs all the way to the Super Bowl. So 18 possible games left. You got a game lead over Bob. You got a 3-game lead over me. So I'm still alive, but it's going to be tough.
Yes.
So I may have to make some strategic decisions about who I'm picking after I hear who you pick. But, let's get into this week's game. So Tone, our first game is going to be the 11-5 Cowboys. That's a 9-7 Eagles. The Cowboys are a 7-point road favorite. Now, Tony, both teams are currently in the playoffs. They're both, you know, going to be in the playoffs. They can't fall out. But they can jockey a little bit up and down. So it's a big win for the Cowboys because they could fall anywhere from the 2 seed to the 5 seed. The Eagles could end up being the 6 or the 7 seed. And oddly enough, no matter which way they fall, depending on all the games, either which way, they're going to end up playing the Bucs in the first round. It's either going to be the 3 and the 6 or it's going to be the 2 and the 7. But either way, it's going to be the Eagles and the Bucs in the first week. So know that going in. Based on that, who do you like in this game?
And see, here's the thing about these games this week. You know, every game is really, you don't know what you're going to do. You know, you want to win, but at the same time, you got to keep everybody healthy. Cause if you win the game and you lose your starting quarterback, you actually lose the game. And so it's the philosophies of all the coaches of what they're going to do. How long are they going to keep those starting players in the game? You want to win, but do you risk it? And so saying all that, I just still think, Dallas needs to win psychologically to, get them a boost to go into the playoffs. Because I feel if they lose this game against the Eagles, you're supposed to beat the Eagles. And so I'm going to go with Dallas because of that. But it's going to be a close game. And so we'll see what happens. We'll see. 27-24 Cowboys.
Okay. Bob, who do you got?
I think Tony explained it great. I think Dallas, they just want to, mentally, you want to keep it going. You know, it's not, they don't want to mail anything in at this point. And, you know, on paper, you would think Dallas, well, they got to be a much better team. Well, their defenses are probably about even. And the Dallas Cowboys have scored, you know, just a few more points. So, I mean, it's not as big of a gap as people might think. But I'm with Tony. I just think Dallas wants to keep going. And Tony's right. You know, there's teams that are going to hear scores during games, and you want to keep people healthy. That affects how people play at times. But I still think they'll have enough to win, even on the road. How about Dallas 30-20?
Okay. And I think you guys are right. I'm going with the Cowboys as well. Bob, you make some really good points. And I think what people need to understand is there's not a whole lot of separation in these teams. And if I told you the Eagles are the number one rushing offense in the league, how surprised would you be to hear that? And how surprised would you be to hear that Ezekiel, you know, as good as Ezekiel Elliott is, Zeke has only got 3 100-yard rushing games this year. And they all came back in weeks 3, 4, and 5. So, you know, hey, the Eagles can run the football. It's in Philadelphia. It's going to be cold. If I really thought that they were going to put their all into this, and like I said to at the top here, right, no matter what way the Eagles go, they're going to end up playing the Bucs in the first round. So I think Tony's right. I think there could be some resting of players and that sort of thing. So I think Dallas has everything to gain. They want to be the 2 seed. They don't want to be the 5 seed. So I'm going with the Cowboys as well. I think it's actually a more of a, Not quite a Tony Collins blowout special, but I'll take the Cowboys 27-10. Our second game is my 8-7-1 Steelers going to the 8-8 Ravens. The Ravens are actually a 5.5-point home favorite. Now, Tony, on Monday night, like I said, you got to see Ben Roethlisberger's last home game. Sunday is going to be his last ever game, and it's against his most intense rival. So does Ben go out a winner on Sunday in Baltimore?
Okay, I have one question to ask. Is Lamar Jackson playing?
I don't think so. I think Tyler Huntley's still going to get the start, and I'm impressed by the way.
If Tyler Huntley's playing in the game, I'm going all the way with the Steelers. Let me tell you something about, I watched the game that Ben played against Cleveland. I mean, he didn't have a great game, but he managed the game, and he did what he had to do to win the game. But it was a great win for him, and I was seeing it. His emotions on the field and after the game, man. You know, I'm big for that. So I'm a Ben fan, man. So I'm going with the Steelers. They can't without Lamar Jackson. They don't have enough weapons. So we're going with the Steelers, 27-17.
Okay, Bob, what do you think?
That's a tough one. This is probably the toughest that I faced this week, just because of the uncertainty of everything, and you got to put the emotional part of it on there. You know what I hear about Jackson? I know he hasn't been practicing, and he's limited at practice, but I still think somehow he might get in there. You know, technically they got a shot. They're at home. The fans are going to be crazy. I'm going to pick Baltimore for some reason. I just have a hunch. I'm going to pick Baltimore to win 23-20.
Well, you know it's going to be close because the games between these two always are.
Always.
But you know, the Steelers got a slim hope of still getting into the playoffs. A miracle is going to have to happen. The Jags would have to beat the Colts, and we know that's not going to happen. But I just don't think Ben goes out a loser. I think he wins at home in his last home game. I think this one's about pride and the rivalry and all of that sort of thing. I think Ben is going to be out there, you know, gunslinger going down, right? I could see Matt Canada, their offensive coordinator, making some play calls, and Ben's just shaking his head like, no, we're not doing that. And he's just going to go out there and he's going to throw 60 passes, and he's going to try to go out a winner and a gunslinger and all that sort of stuff. And I just think he rides off into the sunset. And this rivalry has been great. One of the best in sports. I think they go through it and they do it again. And the Steelers take it 30-27. Before we get to our next game, we've got our next guest, Randy Cross, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Randy here in just a moment. Guys, our third game is the 9-7 49ers going to the 12-4 Rams. Rams are a 4.5-point road favorite. Tony, the Rams need to win to clinch the NFC West. The 49ers win to make the playoffs. So this is sort of a winner go home for San Francisco. Who do you like?
Yeah, that's the whole thing about this. The Rams are already in the playoffs. 49ers are fighting for their lives. So, I mean, you know, it just really depends how the game goes. I mean, if it's a close game, I'm pretty sure the Rams are going to keep, you know, their starters in because they want to win as well. But if you got a 14, 15, 20 point lead, 49ers against the Rams, then there's no way they're going to keep those starters in there because they're already in the playoffs. So I'm going with 49ers. I think they have enough weapons to compete with the Rams. I'm really not impressed with the Rams, to be totally honest with you. They're iffy sometimes. So I'm going with the 49ers because it's a must win for them. We'll go 37, a lot of points scored, 37-31, 49ers.
Okay. Bob, who do you like?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing Randy Cross's memories of this. It's a great rivalry, guys. And, you know, the old games and the old college, I go way back to it, these guys. But, you know, San Francisco, like Tony said, they're playing with urgency. Rams are probably going to say, okay, let's stay semi-healthy here no matter. We still want to win the division. But somehow San Francisco gets it done. I'm going to say they win 27-21.
Okay. And I'm with you guys. I like the 49ers in this game as well. I mean, the Rams have won 5 in a row and certainly don't want to lose and potentially fall from the 2 seed all the way down to the 5 seed if the Cardinals were to win and they lose. But the 49ers, I just think, you know, this is all the motivation in the world. You win and you get to go to the playoffs. Their defense is playing well. They're 5th against the pass, 9th against the run. Matthew Stafford has thrown 6 interceptions in his last 3 games. I think the 49ers are going to be the more desperate team. Their backs are against the wall and they're going to come out with a high level of intensity. I like them to go on to win as well. A close one, I think they get it done 27-24. Our fourth game is Tony's 10-6 Patriots at the 8-8 and eliminated from the playoffs Miami Dolphins. The Patriots are a 6.5-point road favorite. Tony, you know the Dolphins would love nothing more than to push your Patriots down to a lower seed. They would be the 6th seed if they lose. Can they avoid that?
Hey, listen, you know what's going to happen? What's going to happen is New England's gonna win, come beat Miami, and the Jets are gonna beat the Bills.
Oh.
So if that happens, the Patriots get home field advantage?
They wouldn't be right? The 1 seed, but they would be the 2 seed.
No, they wouldn't be the 1 seed, but they'll be the 4 seed and the Bills will be the 5th seed. If that would happen.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so. That that's what's gonna happen. We're gonna beat the Dolphins 37-10, and the Jets are gonna beat the Bills. I don't know what the score is, but the Jets are gonna beat the Bills, and we're gonna have the 4th seed, and the Bills are gonna have the 5th seed, and they're gonna have to come to New England and play us in the playoffs.
Wow. That will be fun. I hope that happens because we'll get Ange back on the show and then we'll have a whole nother bet and that would just be great. Oh, I look forward to that. I hope you're right. Bob, is Tony crazy?
Yeah, well, Tony, I hate to rely on the Jets for anything. So, let's face it. I think New England just kind of cruises in this game, Chris, without going into too much detail. 31-17 New England.
Yeah, I got a 31-17 as well, or 30-17, so very close. Yeah, I don't see there's any way the Dolphins are going to make this thing, unless something, you know, drastic happens. I just don't see it happening. The Patriots, too strong. Tua is still struggling this season. Only, you know, over the last 3 games, he's barely averaged 200 yards passing, 4 interceptions, 3 touchdowns, only thrown for 300 yards once, and that was against the Jags. So I don't see enough offense for Miami to be competitive in this one. All right, our last game is the Sunday night all or nothing, 9-7 Chargers at the 9-7 Raiders. Chargers are a 3-point road favorite. Tony, who goes on and who goes home?
Now, this is the only game that really, really kind of matters, and it's going to be a great game to watch. Let me tell you, I watched the Raiders last week, and you know, I didn't think they could hang with the Colts, man. I really didn't think they could. And, they really surprised me. Raiders got a good football team. They got a good defense. They got a good, passing attack. Isaiah Jones, who is ECU, alumni. He's playing well. I'm going with the Raiders. I think the Raiders can upset them. Playing at home. Close game. 27-24 Raiders win.
Okay. Bob, who do you like?
It can go either way, Chris. I think both defenses aren't that good. So you're going to see some points scored. I just think the Chargers have kind of too much offense. It's going to be close, but I think high scoring. I'm going to give the nod to the Chargers and Herbert. I'm going to go, I'll go the opposite with 27-24 Chargers.
Okay. Well, I'm with Tony. I like the Raiders. I mean, Bob, you and I talked about it at the top of the show. I just don't like what the Chargers do this time of year. They've only been to the playoffs twice since 2010. They wasted all those Phillip Rivers years. Since 2008, they're either 7-9, 8-8, or 9-7, 9 times since 2008, which is, you know, they're 9-7 right now. And, what that tells me is they're a mediocre team and a mediocre organization. I think Justin Herbert is a fantastic quarterback. He's third in the league in passing yards, 35 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, 10th rated. But their defense is 30th against the run. And I think that's going to come up and bite them. This time of year, you got to run the football and stop the run. They can't stop the run. I think the Raiders run on them and they take the game 30-27. Tony, before we let you go, remind everybody about the great things you do to help kids go to college.
Well, this is what we're doing now. We're getting ready to try to get these books into these schools and understanding with the pandemic and everything that's going on right now. We can't get into the schools and speak personally, but we can get the books into the schools and let these kids know what's going on and helping these kids off to college. So that's what we're doing. If you, you know, any schools that need books, hey, go to my Instagram, and this is what we're going to start with coming up in this January, and hopefully we can get to these kids and help these kids out.
There you go. Tony, you're the best, my friend. Happy New Year to you and the family. We look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Same to you guys. Happy New Year.
Take care, Tony.
See you, Tone. That's the great Tony Collins. We've got our next guest, Randy Cross, hanging on the line. Going to get to Randy on the other side of this real quick station break.
Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri. Take it away, guys.
The door is locked. There's no way out.
Now joining us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former 49ers center Randy Cross. Let me give you some background on Randy. He's from Brooklyn, New York, played his college ball at UCLA. He played both center and guard during his time there. He was named first-team All-American his senior season. He also won UCLA's George W. Dickerson Award as the team's most outstanding lineman in 1974 and 75. He helped UCLA to an improbable win over number one ranked and undefeated Ohio State in the 1975 Rose Bowl. Randy was a second round draft pick by the San Francisco 49ers in 1976, and he played in the league from 76 to 88, all with the 49ers. He was named to the Pro Bowl 3 times, and he helped them win 3 Super Bowl championships. He was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2010. After he retired from the NFL, he became a fantastic NFL analyst for CBS Sports and SiriusXM. And we're very honored he is with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Randy, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Randy.
Well, it's a pleasure. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're fantastic. Happy New Year to you and your family. How are you doing?
Happy New Year. No, doing fantastic.
Randy, I want to start our time with you tonight by going all the way back to your high school days. I read that you were a high school shot put champion, and you won the state championship beating future world record holder Terry Albritton and WWE legend Jim Neidhart. Based on the great things that those guys would go on to achieve, that has to be an even bigger thrill now when you look back on it.
Yeah, no, it was a big deal then. And that's sort of the last time I really competed in the shot put, you know, seriously. I did a little bit my freshman year through the 16-pound shot, like 60 feet or so, as a young, you know, like 18, 19-year-old freshman. But I never really much liked lifting weights, to be honest with you. It was all about technique and quickness and things like that, which I really liked. But the whole lifting weights thing, I never really caught on until about my second year in the pros.
Randy, I also read that you were recruited by Alabama, Texas, and Nebraska, who happened to be the number one team in the country at that time. So how was UCLA able to lure you away from three of the top teams in the country?
Well, the late Terry Donahue, you know, what people don't know is he was a defensive tackle at UCLA on a Rose Bowl team in 66 that beat another number one team, Michigan State. And this defensive tackle next to him was a guy named Steve Butler. Steve Butler was my high school football coach. One of my high school football coaches. Three of them also played on that Rose Bowl team. So I guess they kind of had an edge with me. Plus I was raised pretty simply as a football fan. My dad loved football and he had two favorite teams. He loved Notre Dame and he loved whoever was playing SC.
And Randy, during your time at UCLA, you mentioned Terry Donahue. You also got an opportunity to play for Pepper Rodgers and then Dick Vermeil. Talk about what it was like playing for those guys.
Yeah, it was pretty special. Pepper was a very unusual, really smart football guy, but, you know, kind of had a whole shtick going on the way he, you know, he had the Southern drawl and all that, which was an interesting deal for an LA team. But after his second year, he left to go to Georgia Tech, which was his alma mater. So when he left, Dick Vermeil, who was, you know, one of his claims to fame, and hopefully he's soon to be a Hall of Fame football coach too. He was a special team coordinator for Tommy Prothrow with the LA Rams. And he was like the first guy to ever be quote unquote a special teams coordinator. And, he came from that job right over to UCLA as a head coach, 2 years of that. And we won that Rose Bowl. Next thing you knew, Dick was coaching the Philadelphia Eagles.
Five questions for Randy.
Hey, Randy, it's great to speak with you. Thanks for joining us. And I'll ask you what I did to Don Beebe earlier in the night about your draft day back in 1976. You know, having gone to college in California, Randy, to be picked by the 49ers, what were your expectations that day? What do you remember about that whole 76 draft?
Well, my expectations actually, I didn't really much think about getting drafted until probably that spring after my junior year where the scouts started talking to me. And I remember there was a scout that used to be a head coach, actually coach of the Niners, name was Red Hickey. And he was a scout for the Dallas Cowboys. And their head sort of their whole talent evaluation back then was Gil Brandt. And Gil told me that I was going to be a first round draft pick. And I looked at him like, seriously? Okay, great. But that day of the draft, you know, I'm sitting at my parents' house, sitting as close to that kitchen phone as I could get, hoping it would ring. It did ring right before the 28th or 27th pick, which at that year was Cleveland. And I gave him probably the worst answer of my life. Asked a question. They asked me what I thought about being a Cleveland Brown. I said, Cleveland, like in Ohio? And needless to say, they didn't draft a Southern California kid. It worked out well for them, though. They drafted a fullback out of Purdue by Mike Pruitt, who did a great job for them. So, yeah, it was a whole different kind of process back in 76. But it worked out really well, you know, being a California kid.
And Randy, I think when people think of yourself and the old 49er teams, you know, they think that you're always joined at the hip with Joe Montana. But when you came in the league that in 76, Jim Plunkett was the quarterback. And, you know, Plunkett had a great career. We always hear about him and what he had to overcome. And his character was very high. What do you remember about him, the first quarterback he basically played with?
Yeah, just a great guy. We made that trade. They traded away their number one pick. Gosh, I think for 4 years, the first two went to New England for Jim Plunkett, and the second two went to the Buffalo Bills for O.J. Simpson. But yeah, Plunkett was really good. And one of the reasons he had to have that sort of year to rest and heal before he won a Super Bowl with the Raiders. You know, Al Davis picked him up after the Niners cut him. Poor Jim had to stand behind a lot of us that were kind of learning our craft. And he suffered physically for it. But still just a fantastic guy. One of the nicest people I ever played football with. And it's a shame. It was good to see Tom Flores recognized as a Hall of Fame coach here recently, but I think a guy like Jim Plunkett also deserves that recognition.
Randy, I want to take you back to college just for another minute. And as you mentioned, your father loved whoever beat SC. Must have made him a happy day back in 75 when you guys beat SC 25-22 that propelled you guys to get into that Rose Bowl game, which we'll talk about in a minute. But in that game against SC, as I was reviewing the stats, Wendell Tyler, big game, 130 yards. But you guys fumbled the ball 11 times. What do you remember about that day?
Fumbling 11 times. running the ball. We were a Houston Deer offense, so we could run the ball like crazy. And that's the only reason that game was that close is, well, two reasons. One, we fumbled the ball a lot. And number two, John McKay, for some reason, instead of continuing to give the ball to Ricky Bell, and probably, you know, because of those 11 fumbles and the way we played, they might have salted that game away. He decided the best way to beat us was to let Vince Evans throw the ball. And that gave us a fighting chance. So yeah, that was an amazing game. It was one of the two games I played in that people don't quite remember that part of it, you know, the fumbles. The other one is the catch game with San Francisco in January of 82. All the penalties, all the turnovers, everything. I mean, it was aesthetically wasn't a real pleasing game, but had one of the great game-ending drives of all time. One amazing play.
Let's talk about the Rose Bowl game, because you guys get into that game against number one ranked and undefeated Ohio State. They had beat you guys earlier that season, 41-20. They come in a 15.5 point favorite. They had Archie Griffin, who was in the midst of his back-to-back Heisman Trophy years. What did you guys learn from that first game that allowed you to come back and beat them 23-10 and deny them the national championship?
Well, yeah, we had an advantage. I think we had some really good talent that was being overlooked. And I think we also had some pretty amazing coaching. When you look at that coaching staff, that, you know, to us was a heck of an edge. And they were overconfident. You know, they acted like it the whole week. You know, we had gone to Disneyland and we had gone to the Lowry Steakhouse for the big beef bowl and all that. And, you know, Ohio State just thought it was a done deal. They were just going to go out in the Rose Bowl and beat us as bad as they beat us at the Coliseum. And we kind of had other plans, and Dick Vermeil did just, you know, one of the early great jobs of his coaching career, which he would not go on to, you know, get to two other Super Bowls and win one as a coach.
Randy, as we talk about a turnaround from what, you know, that in season with against Ohio State in 1980, when you're in the NFL playing for the 49ers, you guys go 6-10. The next year, you turn it around and go 13-3 and win the Super Bowl. What happened that there was such a dramatic turnaround from one year to the next?
A few things. You know, we got a lot of breaks. We didn't get many injuries. Bill Walsh made some just ridiculous draft picks, drafting pretty much a whole defensive backfield with Ronnie and Eric Wright, and Carlton Williamson. He made some trades. He got Jack Reynolds and Charlie Young from the Rams. He got the Chargers to give away the house that year to give us Fred Dean. He just put together a pretty special, you know, football team. And, you know, he convinced a lot of us that hadn't done much winning that we could do it. And it was definitely one of the most special things, you know, I'd ever done. In the previous 2 years, we had won 8 games. We won 2 games in 79 and we won 6 games in 80. And in total in the 81 season, we went 16-3 counting the playoffs. So, you know, we were ecstatic. We were having so much fun. One of the things I remember is we were always, you hear the term, we were about what's next, who's next. And we got done with that Super Bowl, got on the bus, went to go back to the hotel, and we were kind of looking at each other like, we don't have any more games. We don't get to play anymore. What's going on? It was something. It was a great experience, and it was probably the most pure fun I've ever had playing football.
Randy, talking about special head coaches, last week we lost a great player, a great coach, and an even better person in Dan Reeves. He meant a great deal to both Bob and I. He joined us on the show here pretty regularly. I saw your post on Twitter about Coach Reeves. Wanted to give you a moment to talk about what you knew about Coach.
Yeah, you know, I met Coach Reeves earlier in my career, like through some Pro Bowls and that type of thing. And then I moved to Atlanta in 92. And I got a chance to, you know, do some games, you know, with him when he was coaching. And I got a chance to play some golf with him here in Atlanta. I got the chance to know him and know what a really amazing man he was. Besides being a great football player and an amazing football coach and all that, he was as good as you would think. I mean, just a good old boy from America's Georgia. And, you know, it was fun to be able to say hi to a guy like that and he'd know who you were.
100%. Bob, one more for Randy.
Just Randy, I want to get your opinion about the whole Candlestick Park experience. You know, I'm asked a lot here on the East Coast, Randy, you know, why is Joe Namath in the Hall of Fame? Well, if anybody ever played at Shea Stadium and, did what he had to do in that kind of weather and wind. We always think about Candlestick. I was a big baseball player and watched some games in the 70s that I just couldn't believe. But talk about Candlestick, the experience. Obviously, the fans were there because of the Super Bowls, but how was it as a sports town and playing in that kind of environment?
Well, you know, San Francisco is like every town. When you're bad, it's not very much fun to be a to be an athlete for that particular sport, but we did some winning for an extended period of time there in San Francisco. That, I mean, those fans became about a touchdown advantage. Unless it was a night game, then it might have been a 2-touchdown advantage because they knew how to prepare for a game. And trust me, by the time it kicked off, they were ready to go. Candlestick was an intimate kind of place because, you know, the fans were right on top of the teams, especially the visiting team. And it was a baseball stadium. It had an infield. It was nasty. It was literally below sea level because the bay outside was higher than the field. So when it was high tide, that sod would come up in gigantic clumps. It might be 80 degrees and it'd be like it rained for 2 days. I'm glad we played there. I'm glad, I got to be associated with those fans in that building because those were experiences I'll never forget.
Randy, one more before we let you go. And you were inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame back in 2010. Talk about what it was like for you to be recognized like that.
It was really special. I mean, it was great for my family. Got to share it with my kids and my son and my mom and a couple of my sisters. It was a really amazing class with all the other Hall of Famers that went in with me. It was, I believe, either the last or the next to last year of South Bend, Indiana, because they moved it to Atlanta about 10 years or so ago. And it was a pretty cool place, the Hall of Fame there. And it had a real hometown kind of a feel to it. Maybe not quite like it is right now, because now they do the dinner and all that in Vegas. They did do it in New York, but yeah, it was great. It was great to get that recognition. It was something that really took me by surprise. I mean, I my last college football game was January 1st of 1976. So it was 35 years later I got that call. So yeah, I was a little surprised, but that's cool. It was a great career. And, you know, you have to be a first team All-American to even be eligible to be in that Hall of Fame. So it's a pretty select group.
Randy, before we let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing now, whether it's online or it's on social media?
Well, the best place is always randycross.com. That's where a lot of my podcast stuff and whatnot lives. I'm on Twitter, randycrossfb. I'm on Instagram at rcross51. And I still work with CBS Sports, still do college football. So I stay active doing that. And I'm lucky enough to say through the course of my life, I've had two jobs. My job was to play professional football, and my job has been to talk about football. So I have no delusions. I'm pretty damn lucky.
There you go. Randy, we're pretty damn lucky to have you on the show tonight. We can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come and be a part of it. We hope you'll come back and join us again sometime.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Stay in touch.
Take care, Randy. All the best to you and your family.
All right. Sure will. Thank you.
That's a great Randy Cross, Bob, a heck of a football player, obviously. College football, fantastic with his run there at UCLA. Got to play with a lot of great players and coaches. And then the greatness that happened when he was a part of it there in San Francisco, winning three Super Bowls there. What a tremendous career. And now a fantastic broadcaster.
Very humble and thankful for the life he's had, Chris. And you and I just love those kind of guys that have spent their entire careers with one team, and 13 years in San Francisco. And, you know, there was guys that got more ink than he did, obviously playing with those Super Bowl teams, but he was one heck of a lineman playing both center and guard, and he was one of the best.
Yeah, a rock on that offensive line, and a main reason why Joe Montana wasn't on his backside and got to throw all those touchdown passes. So good for Randy. Hopefully we get the opportunity to catch up with him again soon. All right, we've got our next guest, Todd Stoosy, hanging on the line. Going to get to Stoos right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Folks, I want to remind you again about our friends over at Canopy and their line of CBD products. I used to wake up several times during the night, which made it hard to get out of bed in the morning and left me really feeling less than myself all day. But I can tell you from personal experience, my sleep has dramatically improved since I started using Canopy Nighttime Blend. Now I sleep straight through the night and wake up refreshed every morning. If sleep isn't your issue, they have a variety of products that can help you out. If you struggle with muscle aches after a workout or a day out on the golf course, if you have first tee jitters or your knees lock up in your backswing, check out trycanopy.com. That's trykanibi.com, and look at their selection of tinctures, creams, and gummies that can give you the edge after you exercise or while you're out on the golf course. And really, just make all of your days better. Their hemp is 100% grown in the U.S., and you know we love that. And when you choose Canopy, you are choosing prized harvest, expert extractions, and precision manufacturing with zero artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives. So if you need help sleeping through the night like me, relief from muscle aches, or the pressure of a busy day, give Canopy a try. Again, that's trycanopy, trykanibi.com. And if you use coupon code TNT, you're going to get 20% off your first order. Again, trycanopy.com. You're going to be glad you did.
You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
All right, now back in making his fifth appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Vikings Pro Bowl tackle Todd Stoosy. Let me remind you about Todd's background. Played his college ball at Cal, where he was named All-Pac-10 three times from 1991 to 1993. He was the Morris Trophy winner in 93, which is awarded annually to the outstanding offensive lineman in the Pac-10. Todd was a first-round draft pick, the 19th overall selection by the Minnesota Vikings in 1994. Played in the NFL from 94 to 2007 with the Vikings, Panthers, Bucks, and Rams. He was named to the Pro Bowl in back-to-back years in 1997 and 98. He was a part of the Panthers team that played in Super Bowl 38 against the Patriots. On top of all of his on-the-field achievements, Todd also earned his master's degree from Northwestern University, and we're excited to have him back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Todd, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming back on the show.
I can't believe it's been five times I've been on, but I appreciate you guys having me on again.
You're welcome.
We're
back.
Glad to have you. Todd, catch us up. It's been a minute since we had you on the show. Happy New Year, first of all, to you and your family. What's been going on with you?
Oh, thanks. No, the recent events, back in April, we moved officially out to the Lake Tahoe area. I've been wanting to move back out west for a while, and with work being remote, I can kind of live where I want to, and so I'm spoiled the fact that the mountains are right behind me, and I actually spent a little time on the slopes with my son earlier today. So, no, life is good. I finished my second master's from Northwestern actually this summer. I received my degree in master's of data science. So that's what I'm currently doing with my day-to-day life. And it's the next adventure kind of around the corner post football. And I'm as engaged at this as I am in my previous career. And it's been fun. It's been exciting. It's been entirely different, but it's not nearly as hard on your body.
I bet not. Todd, I want to catch up on a thing that you were doing last time we got to spend some time with you. I know at one point you were a part of a football player health study being done by Harvard University. Did that ever wrap yeah. up, and are you still a part of that?
I'm still a part of it. We meet about every other month virtually right now, and they have a number of different studies that they're rolling out. It was probably 2 years ago that I did a in-person evaluation where it was like an executive level physical, did a number of different tests, and they've done that to hundreds, maybe even thousands of former players, and they're using it to collect information, not just to better understand former players and health and the kind of the wear and tear that's associated with a game like football, but also there's a number of different kind of ways. There's very few longitudinal studies around health that are done. And understanding being able to track someone over a longer period of time and seeing how their health evolves is something that could be beneficial for military with some of the concussions issues that they have. Also, I mean, I actually find a lot of correlation with military in terms of like it's very similar to NFL players. When you kind of a lot of guys leave the league in the early 30s, a lot of times that's when military they're basically forced to kind of contend with leaving a sport or leaving a profession, to say that was really a big part of their identity. I knew a lot of guys from former military that were in the business school program with me that we had a lot to kind of share and discuss around that. So there's it's not just physical health, it's also mental health that the Harvard study is focusing on. And while the returns have been small because it's so early, I think the benefits will continue to grow the longer the study is maintained.
Is part of that study looking into the CTE situation and how guys are, you know, cognitively responding years after their playing days?
Yes and no. I mean, right now the only way you can diagnose it is by having post-mortem, and so there is that challenge, but there's quite a bit about tracking and better understanding cognitive function as you get older post-football, being able to identify potentially commonalities with different players, etc. I mean, I don't want to minimize anyone's burden that has around concussions and that kind of thing. But I do believe that some of this is caught up in the wash with a lot of players that I knew that really struggled post football because it was such a singular identity of who they were. And some of the depression symptoms that are spoken about that commonly are attributed to CTE. I think that a lot of that has to do with also the loss of identity, loss of direction, loss of drive and motivation that a lot of guys suffer. Frankly, I suffered for the first year before I kind of threw myself into academics. Cause it is such a big part of who you are. I mean, when you go to a dinner party talking to somebody, oh, what do you do? Well, it's one thing to say I play football, but it's another thing. I played football and it was 5 years ago. What do you do now? I really don't do anything right now. There's a disconnect that guys really, that if they can't get traction somewhere else, then not everybody can be an announcer, not everybody can be a coach. To find that next direction is something that is equally troublesome.
Yeah, and just to take that a half step further, Todd, and we've talked to Leonard Wheeler, who spent some time with the Vikings and the Panthers as well.
Yeah, I played with Leonard.
And Leonard talks about, you know, what it's like to when your career's over, right? You know, and most guys don't get the teary-eyed press conference, you know, send off. Most guys are retired because they get cut and the phone never doesn't ring again. And now you're left try to figure out who am I and what do I do next? Talk about, you know, you say you went through that for your first year. And like I said, Leonard talked about the struggle that he went through. Talk about what it was like for you.
I was actually getting ready to go back to college to finish my undergrad. Cal's got a kind of, or at least at the time, had a weird little exception where 24 of your last 30 units had to be done on campus to graduate. And so I didn't have the ability to take any more classes elsewhere unless I wound up basically transferring all my credits and graduating from another university. And my wife was not going to have that. She was a Cal grad. She said she's going back. But right when I was getting ready to go back, this was in 2008, my former offensive line coach at the Panthers and the Rams called me up. Paul Boudreau was the O-line coach at the Atlanta Falcons at the time, and I can't remember the guy's name. He was a first-round draft pick out of USC. Baker, I think, was his last name. He was a left tackle. He had a bad back issue that was lingering. I think he had surgery in the offseason, and so they weren't sure if he was going to be back, and Paul asked me, like, hey, if I need you at the end of the training camp, are you going to be in shape? And I'm like, well, I was kind of in my head not really considering it at all, but I was like, no training camp, one more season. Yeah, I could do that, I guess. And so I dropped out of my classes and started working out again. And long story short, they flew me in for a workout. Worked out next to Wayne Gandy, who was also drafted same year I was. He was at the Falcons the year before, and we did a workout. They took a while. End of the day, it was right before Halloween. And when at the end of the day, decided to sign Wayne Gandy, partially because of his contract that they just cut him on. He would have been a smaller salary cap impact than I would be signing out the street. So that was the consideration, supposedly. But long story short, I remember the biggest thing for me was being relieved that I was going to be able, that I actually didn't get signed, because I was more excited probably than signing was the fact that I was going to go back and be able to spend Halloween with my two young sons, who it really kind of hurt me, the fact that I was leaving, but I had already made that commitment and stuff. And so anyways, I came home, and then it was really kind of unclear. Okay, I'm not in school. I'm not working out for any reason anymore. I'm obviously tired. What the heck am I going to do? And my wife will tell you that she's never had her yard look so nice. I kind of got into smoking cigars in the backyard and doing yard work. And it was, she called me her little yard boy. But eventually, you know what? Like, I started to get kind of antsy, irritable, and I needed some direction. And so for me, the following fall, I took one Spanish class that summer in St. Louis, and then I wound up going back to school. I commuted for two semesters and finished my final year in the means that I wanted to. I kind of felt like it was my kids were young. They're used to bringing their grades home to mom and dad. And I told them, like, no, we're flipping the script here. Dad's bringing home his grades to you. And so it was, I got an apartment in, just outside of Berkeley, didn't have a TV, didn't have any distractions. And in that final year, I wound up, really kind of dedicating myself to that as being my primary task. And I got a 3.83 in my final year at Cal. And
there,
that really boosted my confidence. Cause I was eking by at a 2.0 something before then when football was my primary focus. I was doing enough not to get it in trouble, but it was far from like my primary focus. So I never really had a ton of confidence in my academic ability, but that really kind of was my impetus to like, okay, you know what? I still don't know exactly what I want to do, but I know that I'm the way I'm going to fill in for some of my gaps is going back to school. And so I immediately after graduating from Cal, I wound up enrolled in the MBA program at Kellogg Northwestern, finished that in 2012. And during that time that I wound up beginning to work in the analytics space. And but at the same time, I really knew I wanted to go back and get my master's in data science. It took me about 6 years before I built up the courage to tell my wife that I wanted to go back one more time. And then graduated this August from that degree program. And you know what? Long story short, I was very fortunate. And by the way, the NFL paid for this last program. They buy about $50,000 in total expenses. They paid for about 47 of it. So it was, there's so many programs that the NFL offers today through their Players Trust program that it's really just like, it's a shame that more guys don't take advantage of it. But, it is building in popularity. It's building in players being aware of it, et cetera. But really, long story short, is slowly over that. I mean, I'm now 13, 14 years post football, and every year it's like, you know what? I evolve and I grow in understanding and grow in depth. But it's like that first year when you're just kind of coming out, it's tough. I mean, because there's a lot of football teaches you many intangibles, but especially like 2008 when we were, was done in the NFL. I mean, the economy was trash at the time. And what kind of value how am I going to benefit a company? Why are they going to hire me? I mean, I barely even knew how to work a spreadsheet back then. And so it was through the academic programs that I totally built up my confidence and my understanding and really being able to, and then eventually my kind of confidence from football kicked into business where I can do this. I know this. And it was, it's been a great run. I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Bob, questions for Todd?
It's great to talk to you again, Todd. And I wanted to stay on that same topic. Yeah. I think you answered a lot of the same things I was going to ask about ending up at Cal Berkeley as far as an academic institution like that. Was this something, it had to be something that was stressed to you during your upbringing, Todd, but obviously it clicked when you were there and everything, but you had a lot of football ability, but to get into Cal, there was something there. Talk more about how the decision to attend Cal in the first place.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd love to tell you that I was like, no, I wanted to go to a premier academic institution. But the truth is, you know what, I fell in love with Rod Marinelli, who's now the defensive line coach at the Oakland Raiders, and Rod was the head coach at the Detroit Lions. I reconnected when I was in Tampa, but I was so excited about going to play for him as a defensive lineman coming out of high school, and he was just, if you meet Rod once, you'll see the kind of energy, even in his 70s, that he still exudes. And, he was the reason I went to Cal. I was just fortunate that he wasn't like at Fresno State or something like that, because I'd probably not be in the same position I am right now. So for what it's worth, I mean, just being honest with you guys, it wasn't really until my next time around when I went back to Cal after I was done playing, and Cal didn't pay for that. The scholarship was no longer in effect. I paid for that in my own pocket. It was time that I was sacrificing for my own family. And so, damn if I wasn't going to make the most of it. And I'm glad I took that approach, because what it really taught me, and I think a lot of guys, as they leave the NFL, especially if you were able to stick around for a while, even though you don't maybe know anything about business or another industry or whatever, the reality is the template that we use to be successful in football, it's universal. It works everywhere. If you have passion for something and you're committed to being the best at it you possibly can be, you're going to be better than most people out there. That's just the reality, because most people don't care enough. They're not wired away in a way that guys that make it as long as I did in the NFL. It's what you do is so much a part of who you are, and you want to be a part of success. You want to be. There's a kind of a daily challenge where, like, how good can I get today? How can I improve? And those kinds of things that, like, it's just, you know what, it's pointing at the next objective, figuring out what the next objective that truly lights your fire. And I guarantee you, it's like we're getting a late start. I didn't get really into it until I was almost 40. But actually, I was 40. But you know what? I feel like I've made up ground, and my intangibles plus what I've learned in the last 10 years has put me in a position of where I'm able to do exactly what I want to do every day, and still have the free time, like I said, to go skiing with my son in the afternoon.
Well, in addition to the education theme since tonight's show, Todd, we've also talked to our other guests about draft day, and you, unlike some of the other guests, didn't have to wait too long to get drafted. You were a first rounder. What was it like? Bring me back to that day and when a California kid gets the call from the Vikings.
Yeah, absolutely. So Lee Steinberg was my agent at the time, and he actually had Dan Wilkinson, the first pick of the draft. He didn't go to the draft that year. He came to Newport Beach where Lee was having the draft party, and that's where I went. Back in 94, there wasn't really first, like the top couple picks went to the draft, but it was like top two or three. It wasn't the entire first round like it is now. And so I went to Newport Beach. My girlfriend, now wife, her family was down there anyways. And so I wound up watching all the cameras kind of swoop around Dan Wilkinson, and that whole kind of big orchestrated scene. And then it kind of just settled in. I knew that there was a couple, at least Steinberg thought that the Green Bay Packers were going to draft me. I think, they had a 17th pick or something like that. And, my dad was excited about that because he grew up just outside of Green Bay, in Appleton, Wisconsin. And, Green Bay came and went. They wanted drafting, Aaron Taylor from Notre Dame. And so I remember when the Vikings, they had two picks, they had the 18th and 19th pick. They picked, Dwayne Washington, 18. And then they were waiting for the, announcement, and talking to different people. You kind of hear like, okay, you're going to get the phone call before you hear them announce you. And eventually the clock was getting down to like 30 seconds or something. Like, okay, I haven't got a phone call. So, okay, who's up after the Vikings? And, I think Detroit had the next pick or something like that. San Fran was also a consideration. And then, like, I wasn't even watching the TV at the moment. I was like talking to somebody next to me, and I hear my name on the TV, and, Paul Tagliabue announced it. I'm like, who, what? I'm like, it literally kind of threw me for a loop because I was thinking that, and what basically was going on at the time behind the scenes, I found out later, is that the 49ers were fervently trying to trade up to pick me with the 19th pick, negotiating with Denny Green and the Vikings at the, and they weren't able to come to terms. And so because of them being preoccupied with that, they never called me before the draft. They, before they announced me, they just basically called to New York and told whoever ran the card up to go send the card up. So, trade up, I mean, you know what? I wouldn't trade my time at the Vikings for anything by any means, but it is kind of interesting that, Doug Bryan was a teammate of mine at Cal. He, him and a couple free agents, rookie free agents, from Cal also went there. They all got Super Bowl rings that year because 94, the, 95 Super Bowls, the 49ers won. And so, but you know what? They also had offensive linemen like Steve Wallace and Harris Barton and stuff. And so, who knows if I would have played right away. There's, you don't try to look back. And, but yeah, no, so that was my kind of draft day story. And, oh, one last little kind of other mention is, I thought it was really funny how when I flew out to Minnesota that night, they flew me first class. And on the way back, I think this is a good signal they sent. I was like in the last row of coach, like in the corner seat, just stuffed in there. And so it's like, okay, the, kind of bring you down to earth real quick. So, but yeah, no, that was my draft.
Todd, like we mentioned in your intro, you were with the Panthers in 2003 when you guys go all the way to the Super Bowl against the Patriots. What was it like being in that game, and was being a part of a Super Bowl everything you dreamed it would be like?
No, it wasn't. I mean, I don't know. It's really kind of tough. I know I've learned to kind of embrace it and enjoy it a little bit more, but it's like, it's still, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I guess maybe it would have been easier to get blown out and like never to be like, I mean, but we were, our nickname in Charlotte, we were the Cardiac Cats. Like we won, I forget the stat, but we won 8 games by less than 5 points or something like that. We found a way to eke out every close game we won. That playoff, the wild card game, we played the Rams, beat them in a double overtime in St. Louis. And so we just were used to finding a way to win and to get so close to be tied almost before the end of the game. And then circumstances happened that Tom Brady, Adam Vinatieri, we all know the repeating event by same guys, like they tore the hearts out of like 3 different teams over the years, or more if you look at Tom Brady and all the success he's had. But, it was, no, I cherish the opportunity, but it's, like Mr. Richardson was so nice to buy us these gorgeous rings and know it. I've never put it on. And I'd never probably will. It's in my safe. I have it. I'll never sell it or any cherish, but no, it's a loser's ring. I'll never look at it any different than that. It's like, it's a runner up. And it's like, that's okay. I mean, I think I probably, you learn more about yourself through the heartaches than you ever do the successes. And so in a lot of ways, like living through that and kind of learning to deal with it is, one of the reasons why I'm who I am right now. So it's all good, but it's still, I'm glad I had a chance to do it. Wish it was maybe in San Diego rather than Houston. The weather sucked that week, but other than that, no complaints.
And Todd, after the opening kickoff in a Super Bowl, does it turn into just another football game, or were you constantly aware of the magnitude of what that game was?
It eventually, but it was hard to settle down like that. I mean, your heart's racing a million miles an hour. And I knew that I was going to be like reacting that way, that like I literally was trying to play mind games with myself that like, this is just any other game. But like the routine of a Super Bowl is so different than the routine of any other game. The halftime's like an hour. I mean, normally, literally, you come into the locker room at halftime for a normal game. You come in, use the restroom. I would sometimes wind up, like, I sweated like a maniac. I'd sometimes put on dry pants. You'd wind up getting a drink and then talk to your coach for like 3 minutes. And then it was like 2 minute warning. We're going back out. Just like I remember sitting in there like feeling cold and stiff, and I stretched. And I rode the bike, and we had a couple veterans there that were all kind of competing over who's going to get on the bike next, because it's just like it's an eternity sitting in there waiting for the game to begin again. So the routine's really weird, and it was, I wouldn't say it ever felt like a normal game. It was, my heart rate eventually got down to normal, but it's hard to, I'd love to know how someone did it if they were able to trick themselves to just think of it as any normal game, because what other game do you know that, like, you know, there's only one winner at the end of it and the season's over regardless. The one thing I remember most about it, and I've never seen this happen anywhere else, when the Patriots kicked the winning field goal, they had a row or, probably 25 or 30 people in those, like, yellow security jackets. They ran on the field with a rope between them, literally to segment us off, to corral us off the field because they had to get ready for the celebration. And so, you're used to kind of after a game, even if you don't win, you go across and say, hey, good game to the guy that you played against or someone that you maybe know on the other team. Literally, we weren't allowed to. It was get off the field, winners only. And that was harsh. That really kind of stung a little bit, because that was like, dang, it's like you kind of feel like your last night's trash kind of thing.
Wow. Todd, so before...
It's a brutal side of the glamour of the Super Bowl.
I bet. Todd, before we let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing now and follow you, whether it's online or it's on social media?
Yeah, you know what? I don't really. I've been kind of like, life's been busy. I maybe get back into Twitter once in a while. My Twitter is at Todd Stussy, but I don't think I've posted anything in 2 years, so I'm not the best person to know what, if I do get back into it. I've had a couple of kind of engagements, so I'm sure I'll eventually double back, and I do appreciate having me on. It's always great talking to you guys, and I do peek on you guys from time to time. I look into social media. I just don't really indulge in posting very much.
Well, Todd, we're always excited to have you as part of the show. I'm sitting here in my Todd Stussy jersey because how much we enjoy and respect you. So we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'll also bring on some of my other teammates one time. I just had one with Randall McDaniel and Robert Smith a couple of weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. So if you want me to, I can rally some of my former teammates. That's usually fun. Hearing different stories being told.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'd love that. Todd, take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up with you again
soon.
Happy
New Year, Todd.
Hey, Happy New Year. Thank you, guys. Have a great year.
Bye.
Thanks, Todd. That's the great Todd Stussy. Bob, a couple of things about that Stu said, right, about the ring, right? It's the loser's ring. I'm not going to wear it. I can't imagine myself ever wear. That's one of the things that, you know, I always look at when one of our favorite teams is doing well, when the Red Sox are doing well, you know, you can buy the division championship t-shirt. You can buy the wild card championship t-shirt. You can buy the American League championship t-shirt. I don't want any of those t-shirts. I don't want any, if it's not the Super Bowl, it's not the World Series. I don't want to remember, hey, we won the ALCS, but we lost the World Series. No, I don't want that. All right. That to me, just like Todd said, that reminds me not to revel in the fact that the Steelers won the AFC championship or the Red Sox won the ALCS. That reminds me that we didn't win the big one, that we lost. I don't want it around. You know, I understand what that feels like or what that must feel like. It's, you know, you're like, yeah, that's nice. We didn't win it though. I don't want to think about that.
And I can imagine that that must be how Todd feels.
Exactly, Chris, and I totally agree with both of you. I mean, think about it. I mean, there's so many schools and teams. I mean, you see stadiums of some of the lesser teams that haven't won in a long time, but they have won maybe division titles in the past, and they have banners for that now, Chris. And you see them all over gymnasiums. I've seen them on college campuses. You know, so-and-so won the this division of this in 2004, they have banners and upon banner upon banner, but none of them are championship banners. I mean, it's almost like a reason to cover the wall, you know, but I could understand Stoos saying, you know, look, I mean, if I stare at this ring, all that's going to do is saying we came up short. And
right.
That's not what they play the game for. Yes, it's an accomplishment. It's like any other trophy, but when you play at that kind of level and you get to that kind of a game with that kind of meaning, that could only be kind of a disappointing thing. So I'm totally with you guys, and I totally agree with him.
And I don't know if you remember, but way back when early on in this show's history, we had Dorsey Levins on the show, and Dorsey won a Super Bowl, lost two. And he talked about how he wished he didn't go to the two that they lost. He said, I'd rather not have played in the Super Bowl than to have played in the Super Bowl and lost, because the pain is too much. You remember, for having, you know, you climb the ladder all season long to get to the top and then you fall short. I'd rather not have climbed that far. And I understand that. It's something that's always stuck with me that Dorsey told us. And again, tonight with Stoos. Yeah, I can understand how that would be a pain that you just rather not think about. So I get it. All right. When Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive. Hear two more great stories about guys out there doing great things in their communities. We'll do that right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Thursday night tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, we are back here on Thursday night tailgate, and we're turning on our spotlight on the positive. Bob, who are you putting your spotlight on this week?
A great time of the show, Chris. You know how much I love this. And, you know, this story this week is pretty cool because we're going to honor Travis Kelce. Now, when you hear, we're going to go Jason Kelce. How about his brother this time? Because I actually slipped up and said Travis. You see, when we mention the word Kelce, you automatically think of the Kansas City Chiefs, right, Chris? Everyone does. And
right.
For good reason. You know, Travis is an all-world player, has been for a long time. Well, guess what? His brother, Jason, is actually older than him. He's been in the NFL 11 years now, Chris. And, you know, I don't know if too many people even know, number one, that Travis has a brother that's in the NFL. Number two, that the guy's been an all-pro and a Pro Bowl player a few times. So right away, we know this guy goes under the radar screen, does what he does. You never hear from him, obviously, but when you read about what he does off the field, it makes a lot of noise to me, Chris. I mean, I read about this guy, and this is one of the, you know, every guy that we honor every week here deserves it. But when I read about what this guy does, I'm saying, my goodness, you know, he's got to be, and we say that about them all, but I'll just go through some of the things, Chris. I mean, this is a guy, he's very connected to the autism effort throughout the country. He has a big connection to the Eagles Autism Foundation, him and his wife, Kylie. And his wife, Kylie, is involved in special ed. But, you know, just this past year, I mean, Jason found out about this cause, and he spent 4 hours working as a celebrity bartender, serving drinks to Eagle fans. And it raised a lot of money to go to autism, and the Kelce family matched the effort. It was well over $100,000. And he's been very big with this, and we'll get back to autism in a minute, but he's done so many work for other organizations, Chris. The Eagles Charitable Foundation, he's always involved with that. He's done Habitat for Humanity, the Ronald McDonald House. He's actually had kids, you know, come to Lincoln Financial Field, you know, his treat. There's an organization called Bringing Hope Home. He's big time. He's big into the breast cancer awareness effort. But again, going back to his wife, you know, he originally got into the whole Autism Foundation. It's a pretty cool story. You know, his wife said, you know, the thing with autism, he says, I want you to come home. When you come home tonight, I'm going to introduce you to a close family friend of mine who has autism. And Jason, I don't know if he was never exposed to it or it was the first time he ever came, but he really grew close with this guy. And then it just became, he became a passionate advocate ever since then, Chris, and that he's devoted his life to it, man. I mean, this is a guy that actually, you know, got on to the Today Show and played the saxophone, with the Philadelphia Orchestra playing Fly Eagles Fly just to gain some money, for autism. And,
wow.
But, you know, and one more story about him. He really, he got a connection with one, an Eagle fan named Ben. And this is a kid with autism. And he actually, Ben asked him one day, you know, and Ben thought he, was, he said, let me just take a shot. I'm going to ask Jason Kelce if he would want to come to my amusement park where I work. You know, so he jokingly asked him, you know, would you like to come see my, and guess what? Well, true to Kelce's nature, Chris, he accepted. And, he spent 4 hours with him at the amusement park that day. And ever since that day, you know, they've been inseparable, a kid with autism. So
wow.
it's that kind of guy that this guy, and he continues to do it. And again, he likes actually being in the shadow of his brother because he says he can do a lot of things that I just mentioned without being, you know, totally recognized and having his face put all over the place. So again, we'll remember Travis and when he gets into the Hall of Fame. But Jason is just as much a Hall of Famer off the field, Chris. And I urge people to go to the NFL Man of the Year part of the NFL site. Just look up all the nominees. Everyone's got a great story, but the one with Jason Kelce is especially special tonight.
Yeah, that's a tremendous story. And for folks that, as you mentioned at the top of the story, Bob, that may not know that Travis had a brother, Kelce, who played in the league. He's played in the league for 10 years. He's a 5-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro, won the Super Bowl. He's a center for the Philadelphia Eagles, first of all. Let's put that out there. And won a Super Bowl with the Eagles a few years ago. So a tremendous career on his own, played his college ball at the University of Cincinnati. We know what a great year Cincinnati has had.
Yeah.
But tremendous story for what he's doing, for autism and doing, doing around Philadelphia. And you know what, Bob, I'm going to stay with the same team. I'm going to put my spotlight on Eagle safety Rodney McLeod and his wife, Erica, for the work they're doing with their foundation, which is called Change Our Future. They had several programs going on over the holidays and going back to before Thanksgiving, they passed out turkeys to over 200 families. Then they had a 12 days of Christmas program where they, their community partners and a group of volunteers did 12 random acts of kindness for people in the Philadelphia community. And one of those acts of kindness, when I say they did 12 groups of acts of kindness, not just 12 single acts of kindness. One of those acts was going to the local grocery store there in Philadelphia, where they handed out Christmas cards with gift cards inside them to help people pay for their groceries. So they fanned out across the store, went to different lines in the grocery store, handed out these cards to help people pay their groceries that day. Then Rodney had some of his teammates, and their families, and they went to Target and handed out gift cards for people to shop for Christmas gifts and other necessities that they needed. So they sort of did the same sort of theme, grocery store, Target. Then they turned around and gave $500 gift cards to the volunteers that went with them so that they could do the things that they needed for their families for the holidays as well. Plus, they've got several other programs in place throughout the year. They call them their four pillars of success, which starts with youth development to help promote character, leadership development, positive self-image, and financial literacy. Then they've got an education pillar to prepare students to graduate from high school and go on to college. They have a health and wellness pillar that focuses on overall well-being, plus the prevention and cure for breast and pancreatic cancer. And then finally, a community empowerment pillar that focuses on family empowerment and eliminating the label of being underserved. So Rodney McLeod and his wife, Erica, are getting involved in a big way, giving back to the Philadelphia community as well, on top of what you talked about with Jason Kelce. Check out the great stuff they're doing by going online to changeourfuture.org. Some amazing stuff, Bob, from that family.
Oh, kudos to the Eagles, huh, Chris? What a
right.
Dedicated franchise. And again, talk about it every week. We've heard about knuckleheads doing things during the week, but compared to what these guys do that we mentioned, you know, these guys always have to overshadow the others, and that's why we have this segment, Chris. We need to talk more about what the good things that are happening and not put that stigma on NFL players just because of the actions of a few, because these guys are out there raising millions of dollars for great causes, and the good ones get it, Chris, and thank goodness that most of them are good ones.
Yeah, no, 100%. For every Antonio Brown, there are 100 great guys out there doing stuff in their communities, whether it's in the communities they play in, whether it's their NFL community, their college community, their hometowns. They're out there doing this kind of work. And just think about the two things we talked about tonight and the amount of money and the amount of good that they did and the impact that they have on people's lives, the autism folks and their families here, underserved families that that they made a huge impact over the holidays. These are the things that guys are doing, right? These are the stories that you don't hear enough about. We hear too much about Antonio Brown. Bob, what you talked about earlier, I think we need to live by that. Tonight's the last night we're talking about Antonio Brown, regardless of what he does in the future. You know, any knucklehead stuff, all that sort of thing, we just need to have a moratorium on talking about Antonio Brown. But these guys that are out there doing these great things that we spotlight every week are the ones that we're really going to focus on. So
those
kudos
are the heroes.
To both of these guys. That's right.
Amen.
All right, my friend, it is time for us to put a bow on this edition of Thursday Night Tailgate. We want to send out our thanks to Don Beebe, Tony Collins, Randy Cross, and Todd Stussy for joining us tonight. And as always, Bob, I'm so thankful to get to spend my Thursday nights with you, my friend.
Same here, Chris. That was a great show with some great friends. And Randy Cross, a new guest, hopefully he'll come by. That was a terrific segment. And again, before we leave, we want to definitely pay homage to Coach Reeves. Chris, I know he meant so much to both yourself, and he was so cooperative on the TV side, the radio side. And, you know, we say goodbye to guys that have perished in the past, but Coach was very near and dear to both of us. And the good thing, Chris, is he'll always be in our hearts, and he'll always be a Hall of Famer to us.
Yeah, absolutely, a guest Hall of Famer, and it certainly was a gut punch for both of us when we heard that Coach passed, and very near and dear to us on the show. You heard a little bit about that from Randy Cross tonight as well, but someone who meant a great deal to us, and he is going to be missed.
Yes, rest in peace,
yeah.
Coach Reeves.
Yeah.
We want to thank our announcer, Joe Lajanusa, also, Chris, for the great job he always does with our intro and ads. We also want to thank Kyle Turley and the Kyle Turley Band for the upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris, we want to thank everyone out there tonight for listening. We appreciate you the most. Until next week, good night, Kevin. Good night, Terry, and good night, Rusty. We also miss you guys.